case, United States v. Hatfield. Mr. Williams.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Stephen Williams. I'm arguing on behalf of both appellants Rex and Heverly Hatfield today. Your Honors, I think as to point one on appeal, the issue here boils down to whether or not the jury instruction given by the court, and in this case, instruction 33 and the final paragraph of that instruction, properly defines but-for causation. It doesn't appear that there's any argument that but-for causation is required. And so the issue is, do the words in particular was a factor or played a part water down the requirement of but-for causation to a point that it allows the jury to find that a distributed drug that they have decided was distributed at some point in time resulted in death on the basis of something other than but-for causation, on the basis of...
What instruction did you want?
The instruction that we proposed, Your Honor, simply left off the last paragraph of instruction 33. It was a mirror image of the government's instruction, except for the fact that it eliminated that last paragraph, and it simply...
The entire last paragraph?
That's correct.
So it just had as a result?
That's correct. And that is the statutory language that is employed in the statute. And as a result, certainly, it is our position, incorporates but-for causation. What but-for causation would prevent in terms of specifically defining it, or at least not defining it in a way such as was a factor or played a part, is a couple of situations that could very well have been at play in this case. For instance, did a particular drug that was distributed by one of the defendants make one of the decedents more susceptible?
I'm surprised you wanted to just lop off the last paragraph, because if the last paragraph is lopped off, the instruction doesn't actually say that the government has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. Right.
Well, but certainly that's the standard. I mean, I don't think that there's any question.
But the next paragraph, the one you wanted to leave in, that has no reference to reasonable doubt either.
Well, Your Honor, there is certainly reference to reasonable doubt in the instructions, and I don't think that the issue of reasonable doubt is what the problem is.
You were content. If it just said results, you were content with results.
We were.
The statutory term. Okay.
That's correct. Because it's not the reasonable doubt part that's in question. The issue is,
right.
is was a factor. Does that water it down? I mean, do you believe beyond a reasonable doubt that one of these drugs that one of these defendants distributed was a factor? Well, that could potentially apply to a drug that might have been distributed on a different date entirely.
Did you argue this in the district court?
Well, what we argued was that the instruction that we presented should apply.
Well, what did you say about the government's instruction?
That it watered down the requirement.
You didn't object to it.
Yes,
didn't.
Indeed, yeah. Indeed. And that is why we proposed the instruction that we did. Certainly,
but you just proposed lopping off that last paragraph.
That is all we proposed, is that the results from was a proper statement of the law, and it is our position that that does incorporate but-for causation, and that the prejudice that is suffered by a defendant in this particular type of circumstance is very obvious, especially in a case like this, where you have the decedents and the individual who suffered the harm.
Do you know, I'll ask your opponent also, but do you know where that business about have played a part, that language must at least played a part, where it came from?
I do. It came directly from the Eighth Circuit Monnier case. Monnier.
From opinion, I see.
Yes, that was the language that was employed in that opinion.
Mr. Williams, how would it have impacted the evidence presented?
or challenged. Let's assume this is inartful and may skirt the...
I'm sorry.
Let's assume this instruction is inartful and skirts the law. As opposed to but-for or the causation, how does the evidence come in differently? What would the jury be searching for if the instruction were as you would have it?
Well, I think the evidence comes in the same, but in terms of how they evaluate...
Yeah, well, about that. How would a reasonable juror evaluate the two phrases in a fashion that could cause a lesser standard to be applied by the jury?
Sure. First, there's two important ways that they could have looked at this. First of all, the jury can look at the instructions and say, was a factor or played a part, could be accomplished, or proof of that could be accomplished by simply showing that one of a drug that we believe one of the defendants distributed at some point in time made a decedent more susceptible. And this is somewhat...
Well, let's stay with that. Suppose it does make you more susceptible and eventually you die.
Well,
what's the difference?
Well, the difference is...
As opposed to a direct, you died that day because you took the drug.
Well, it's a fair question, but it's not but-for causation, because simply making someone more susceptible does not have necessarily...
So do you need medical testimony to reach the threshold that you would require on the but-for?
Oh, I believe you absolutely have to, in the form of... And I'm not saying there was no medical testimony here, but the government did put on medical testimony, and we're not challenging the fact that they didn't. But, yes, I think you must...
Did they not, in light of this impaired instruction, as you see it, did they not put on enough medical evidence?
Well, I think we conceded on our brief that it is possible. It's certainly possible that if the jury had been instructed properly, they could have reached...
Well, if it's possible and you're not questioning reasonable doubt, so the jury
Correct.
Does apply reasonable doubt, and it's possible. Where are we falling through the trapdoor?
Well, the problem is the jury did not have to base its decision on that. The jury could have based its decision and very well could have based its decision. And that's where the prejudice is, on a lesser standard in this case, and that lesser standard being susceptibility without cause, in fact, without but-for causation. Because the mere fact that something may have made them more susceptible does not mean that absent the drug in that particular case, they still would have died.
How did the medical testimony play out here with regard to that?
Well, the medical testimony was that a specific drug, as to some of the decedents, that a specific drug was there was enough to be fatal, I should say. A number of the doctors testified that way, so lumping them together. But if you look at the autopsy reports and even their testimony, the way it is illustrative of what the issue is here, because they also say, hey, we're talking about mixed toxicity. There's multiple drugs at stake. Those autopsy reports are what the jury had when they went back into the jury room and in thinking about the case and whether the government met its standards. So I think when you look at that, that's very important, and especially when you're talking about people who have multiple sources of different types of drugs. And that is a second way in which this could have been prejudicial, because it wasn't necessary for the jury to even decide that the drug they ingested on that particular occasion was the drug that was a drug that was distributed to them by one of the defendants. Certainly there was some evidence of that, but it wasn't necessary that they decided. They could have decided, hey, we believe that one of these defendants on a previous occasion must have given one of the decedents one of these drugs. And that had played a part in their overall addiction. But that's still not cause and fact or but for causation. So on that basis, I think the prejudice is manifest. I do want to go ahead and address some of these other points, even though I'm impinging on the rebuttal time. The serious injury of Mr. Ward.
Oh, you just have a minute left, so I can
I will wait. Thank you.
Mr. Garrison?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Bob Garrison. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney from Southern Illinois, and I prosecuted this case at trial. I'd like to begin by responding to a question that Judge Flom asked. Members of the court, there is a profound factual disagreement here, and it came out in Judge Flom's question. I would submit, contrary to what Mr. Williams just stated, that there is unequivocal evidence as to each and every one of these deaths that one of the drugs distributed by the defendants alone...
You didn't argue harmless error in your brief, did you?
Well, no, not on this point.
No,
on other points, I don't think harmless error applies here.
Okay, it doesn't apply. Let me ask you, in your brief, in a space of three pages, you use the following phrase: direct cause, sole cause, actual cause, but-for cause, contributing cause, concurrent cause, proximate cause. Now, would you distinguish those for me?
Well, may I address it this way? I have cited to the court three cases from three different circuits, the 8th, the 5th, and the...
I'm not asking you about case. I'm asking you to distinguish these terms.
A proximate cause means that there was an unbroken chain, that the death was foreseeable. But-for cause, which is what is required, is defined, I think, best in the Pacheco case out of the First Circuit, which said... We're applying but-for causation, and we're holding that that means a concurrent cause which played a meaningful role. That is
that
how they...
strikes me as gibberish.
Well, with all respect...
What does a meaningful role mean?
Under the Monnier case from the Eighth Circuit, which the defendants are asking you to basically take an entirely different position, overrule in a sense, in this circuit, all that is required is contributory causation.
What does that mean? These are just words.
Well, they're the words that sister circuits have used, Your Honor.
Yeah, but they don't mean anything, as far as I know. Now, if you can explain them to me, fine. What's a contributing cause?
It's something that contributes to the death.
Well, suppose I eat too much whipped cream. And I have a heart attack, I die, they look at my arteries, they say, oh, this guy has a lot of plaque there. Yeah, and then my wife says, yeah, he kept eating all this whipped cream. Now, is my eating the whipped cream a but-for cause of my death?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm just having trouble following that hypothetical. I mean... You die from overeating whipped cream?
No, I died of a heart attack. And when they look inside, they say, God, he has a lot of plaque in his arteries. And my wife says, yeah, he ate a lot of whipped cream. Now, does that mean that eating whipped cream was a but-for cause of my death?
No.
What was it then? Wasn't it it contributed? Right.
At such a remote level that I don't think it could be considered a but-for cause.
Okay, well, didn't it play a part in my death?
No, I don't think so.
Didn't play a part?
Well, it did.
What if the doctor said, you know, we can't be certain about these things, but if your husband hadn't eaten so much whipped cream, he might well still be alive.
Your Honor,
and then my wife would say, well, I guess the whipped cream played a part in his death. I don't know how big a part, but it did play a part.
Well, presumably... The doctor's testimony would carry more weight than your wife's opinion. And if I might finish my response to Judge...
Well, the doctor says, yes, I agree with her. If you eat a lot of whipped cream, it increases the probability, it increases the amount of plaque in your arteries, and that increases the probability of a heart attack, which is often fatal, right? What's wrong with that? So it played a part. Why did it play a part?
Because it's too remote. It renders the discussion of this case inane to carry.
What is it in the expression "played a part" that gives you a measure of remoteness?
Well, if you read the instruction in its entirety, he begins by saying, and I'm quoting from the government's brief, page 14, where the instruction.
Brief. Let's look at the instruction.
That's what I'm referring to, Your Honor, on page 14.
Yeah.
It begins by, the instruction itself begins by saying the United States
yes,
must...
I know what it means, but it ends with this played a part, and that's so vague. And I don't know how played a part relates to any of these concepts of causation.
That it was one of the drugs that caused the death, and
but
the language...
Look, what but-for causation means is if he hadn't taken the drug from your from the defendant, he would not have died. That's what it means. You could have told the jury that's what it means. You have to decide, would this person have died if he hadn't taken the defendant's drug? That's extremely simple. And I don't understand why you don't say tell the jury that, rather than have them wonder, what does played a part mean?
Well, Judge Flom analyzed this.
What if the drug just weakened the guy? It weakened him, which meant the next time he took an overdose, he was dead because he was weakened. Now, would that be a but-for cause?
Arguably, again.
Not arguably. Look, this is supposed to be definite. What is the jury supposed to do with that?
I think that under the language in the instruction, the jury was supposed to find that the drugs distributed by the defendant contributed to the defendant directly.
But contributed is too vague, because in the example I just gave, you have the overdose, it weakens you, it makes you susceptible. So the next time you have an overdose, you die, because you were made more susceptible. Now, is that your conception of a but-for cause?
No.
And where do you and how do you get that out of played a part? Where do you get that?
The court is being urged to accept an interpretation of the statute that has been rejected by, I would submit, all the other circuits that have considered the point.
We agree on the meaning of the statute. We agree it's but for cause. The question is, what is a but for cause? I don't think you know, because you can't make up your mind about these weakening situations.
No, I don't think that would. No, I believe, Your Honor, I answered that directly, that I think the answer to that question would be no. But again, it seems to me that.
Well, what if he hadn't been weakened, he wouldn't have died from the second overdose?
You take, as I'm sure you recall from all the language we were taught in law school, you take your victim as you find him. I mean, if someone has been weakened by another earlier drug situation or because of a congenital physical condition, it doesn't make any difference. You take the victim as you find
them.
That's
not the case I'm talking about. And what I'm trying to get you to focus on is a situation where the defendant's drug, the bad drug. There's no pre-existing condition of the victim. The bad drug weakens him. And then later, when he gets another overdose, it kills him. And the overdose wouldn't have killed him, let's say, if he hadn't been weakened previously. Now, is that weakening a but-for cause?
I would argue not, again.
Why not? Because if he hadn't been weakened, he wouldn't have died from the second overdose.
He did, though, and the defendant distributed the drug that resulted in the death.
But you said it's not a but-for cause.
Your Honor, I can discuss the case law, but I'm not clear that I understand the point you're driving at.
A very simple example. The defendant sells a victim an illegal drug. It weakens the victim's system. Later, he gets an overdose from someone else, and as a result, he dies. And suppose he wouldn't have died if his system hadn't been weakened by the defendant's drug.
The first time.
Now, was that first ingestion of the defendant's drug, was that a but-for cause of his death?
I think under the applicable case law, Your Honor, it is not.
But it is. It is. Because the way I put it was, if he hadn't had the first illegal drug, he wouldn't have died from the second overdose. Well, that's a... Right? That's just...
I view those facts.
He'd still be alive if he hadn't had the illegal drug. And you're saying that's not a but-for cause, which is baffled.
If it happened 5 years earlier and it weakened his system, we would be allowed under that theory to go back and charge on the first drug offense that occurred 5 years earlier because it weakened the system. I think that's too remote to be considered.
I didn't give you an interval.
No, but
I pick your interval. How about it's a week?
That would be a much harder case, and perhaps then it would be a but-for case.
Well, I don't see what guidance the jury was given in how to decide such a case.
I see my time is up.
Can you answer my question? What guidance was the jury given to deal with a difficult case where the drug has hurt you, harmed you in some way, and you died, but there may have been other factors involved.
They were given the instruction that death resulted from the substance.
That's fine. I think that's fine. What I don't understand is why you had to throw in playing a part, which gets into all these ambiguities.
Because it seemed to be the subtle law from the Eighth Circuit, the Fifth Circuit.
That doesn't mean it's a good instruction to give a jury. The notion that you take language from a legal opinion, judicial opinion, give it to a jury, that's not a good idea. That's how some, you know, judges may try to protect themselves against reversal. But you want to try to make things clear to a jury, not give them what's in judicial opinions. Make it clear. Results is clear. Played a part is unclear.
Well, I understand your position. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Garrison. Mr. Williams, what, has a minute left? Or, yeah.
I'm just going to go ahead and stick with this first point that we've been spending time on. I see the problem with meaningful role, played a part, as all being the same. And it is the problem that we're complaining of. And that being that, it doesn't, not only is it unclear, it does not necessarily require but-for causation. Getting to the point that was discussed, there could be an issue of a weakening of the system that the, or simply just contribution to someone's addiction, where the jury could have made it come to a conclusion that played a part was at work here, but it didn't necessarily have to decide but-for causation.
So in a case like this, if these victims are regular drug addicts, how would we ever know the but-for of it?
Well,
what doctor would be able to say that X, who's been ingesting drugs for 20 years and then takes this last potion, is a but-for? Suppose you have but-for. Could a jury ever, when you look at the genetic disposition of people, their behavioral approach to life, how can we ever get to a but-for with the certainty that you're asking for, Mr. Williams?
Your Honor, my time is up, but if I might answer that.
Closer, I'll let you answer.
Thank you. I think that that still can be achieved, and that doesn't prevent the government from doing that.
Well, will reasonable doubt come about if you were to show the drug history of all these victims and get a physician to say, well, with their susceptibility, to, you know, their genetic makeup, we could never know what the fatal dosage was the cause.
I think the government still has the option, which it did attempt to do in this case, of saying on this discrete moment, this particular overdose, were it not for this overdose, the decedent would not have expired.
The government will be about finding physicians to say that.
I'm sorry?
You think physicians are available to the government to say that?
Well, the government put on physicians to say that in this case.
How soon after the overdose did the victim die?
Well, it varied from case to case, but we're not... I would say, without knowing specifically as to each of the decedents, Your Honor, in thinking about the evidence, I believe that in each case we're talking about within a 12-hour period they're at the hospital and have died, and it may have been considerably less than that. I think that's a fair assessment, and in this case the jury was confused as evidenced by their question. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not? Mr. Williams?
You're a defense.
Okay, well, we thank...
Okay.
Well, we thank both of you. We thank the defenders for your efforts on behalf.